Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
To Ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The Small Business Advocate, Jim Blasingame.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. My pleasure as always. If you just tuned in, we're glad you did that. Welcome aboard. If you've been listening already, we consider that a sign of high intelligence. You're going to be glad you hung out with us today because we got a special friend on the show, special new friend on the show right now, ladies and gentlemen. Ambassador Donald Blinken is with us. And he began his career in the marketplace, just like you and me. He wound up co-founding a venture capital company, E.M. Warburg Pincus & Company out of New York, helping companies capitalize their dreams and their business models. And we'll talk about that a little bit too today. But then later he joined the Foreign Service. He became an ambassador to Hungary in the Clinton administration. And he was over there in Hungary in the years immediately following the fall of the Soviet Union. So some fascinating stories. And he and his lovely wife, Vera, have written a book called Vera and the Ambassador, Escape and Return. And he's here to talk to us about his experiences. And we're going to get some wisdom out of him, too. Mr. Ambassador, Ambassador Blinken, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Jim. Delighted to be with you.
It's good to have you here, and congratulations on your book. Give our best to the missus and tell her that we look forward to having her on the show again one day as well. I want you to talk about, before we get into your time in Hungary, I want you to talk about the early part of your career. And you know, we got a lot of small business owners at your knee right now that would like to hear your thoughts on the marketplace. Some of your thoughts on the marketplace, especially when you were a young man starting your career, what was on your mind with regard to opportunity?
I felt very optimistic, as most people did in the 1950s and 60s. The world was a wonderful place, and we didn't have the sort of problems that we're facing now. We knew that the Soviet Union was our main adversary, but other than that, it was a very straightforward experience. And I went into retailing initially, and then in the late 1950s moved to Wall Street, worked with a small firm called E.M. Warburg, and then in 1966, Lionel Pincus and I formed E.M. Warburg Pincus, which went on to become one of the leading venture capital firms in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I left that firm actively about a dozen years ago, but I was very, very much involved in its formative years.
Well, if you were trying to start a company like that today, if your son, for example, was going to start a company, if he had the same idea to start a company like that today, how would that track be different from the one you were on?
Well, this would be a particularly difficult time to start that kind of a business because of the freeze up of capital generally around the world. Venture capital firms, fortunately, firms like Warburg Pincus, for example, were not highly leveraged. They used their own capital to make investments in emerging
mm-hmm.
companies. But the problem is not so much buying companies, but selling them. At the moment, there's no opportunity really to sell new companies or young companies. The new equity market has dried up, and so venture capital firms are sitting on many what I suspect would be very, very good investments, but they can't liquidate them yet.
This would not be a
great time necessarily to start up, although there are many wonderful opportunities out there. So if a group of young people could put together enough capital, make some investments, and be prepared to sit with them for 3 or 4 or 5 years, they'll do very, very well, but they'll have to sit.
Are you concerned about the future of capitalism, Mr. Ambassador?
Not
with
at all
the things
I
that
think.
Have gone on. Tell us, we'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
No, I think capitalism is fine. I think capitalism needs to look at itself more critically from time to time. We obviously had many excesses during the last 10 or 15 years, particularly a lack of regulation, and for me, too much emphasis on creating new kinds of paper, new kinds of
right. Re-securitizing things that had already been securitized.
That's
and leveraged.
I've been more interested, my colleagues were more interested in actually investing in companies that made things or provide services that people actually can use.
Right. Well, yeah, I think the problem we got into was we took an asset and we leveraged it. We turned it into a security and sold it, and then somebody took those securities and made a whole new market on top of it without creating any new value. But all they did was add risk and leverage in risk, and that's when the house came tumbling down, wasn't it?
Absolutely, and the trail was broken between the originator of the underlying asset and the actual owner of the security.
Right.
Too many steps in between, which were too difficult to follow and fathom.
And because of that extra layer, assets that just merely may have defaulted turned into toxic viruses that infected the entire system.
You've got it right, Jim. Exactly right.
Yeah. Hold on to that thought, Mr. Ambassador. We're going to take a quick break, folks. This is fascinating stuff from somebody who's been there and done that, that you and someone you and I can learn a lot from. Ambassador Donald Blinken, he and his wife Vera have written a book called Vera and the Ambassador. It's a fascinating read, and we got more to come right after these messages. 20 till. Stay with us. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Thank you for checking it out, using it to your advantage. We built it for you. There's no barrier to entry. If you can get there, we'll let you come in and hang out with us and use our stuff. My knowledge base is there. AskJim.biz right off the homepage. The blog is right off the homepage. You can find the link to subscribe to the newsletter right off the homepage. You can listen to archives of past interviews, the ones we do today, the ones we did yesterday, the ones we did 10 years ago, and everything in between. Lots and lots of stuff there. Articles that I've written, my Brain Trust members have written. I hope you'll take advantage of all the stuff that's there that'll help you in your small business. Ambassador Donald Blinken is our guest, ladies and gentlemen, our new friend, and he and his wife, Vera, have written a book called Vera and the Ambassador, and it's all about their experiences as the ambassador to Hungary. Now, Mr. Ambassador, your wife, Vera, was actually born in Hungary. She was a Hungarian, and
yes.
she escaped with her mother, as I remember.
That's a very interesting story in itself, and their method of escaping was very novel and very original.
And they were escaping from the communists, right?
From the communists, yes. Her mother was widowed, and she felt that there was no future for them in Hungary in 1948, 49, 50. And just about at that point, the Hungarian government decided to expel all foreigners, all foreign citizens. And as the book points out, Vera's mother, through the Italian ambassador to Hungary at the time, had an arranged marriage with an Italian gentleman, married her, took her and Vera out of Hungary, and then the marriage was annulled. But it all worked beautifully, and Vera and her mother moved on to New York, where the mother...
That's called survivorship, isn't it? That's called surviving.
That's why we got involved in Hungary in the first place. But to answer your question, once we returned to Hungary in 1987, 88, 89...
She had not been back by then,
had she?
Not
been back before, and... Once she got back and got started, she formed a foundation to promote nutrition and health care, and she underwrote the first Peace Corps conference in Europe, which was held in Budapest in 1989.
Mm-hmm.
So we began to get very involved in American-Hungarian relations. I was an early Clinton supporter and worked with him from 1992 on. And after he won the election, and Vera and I said to ourselves, you know, what we really like to do if we're offered anything is to go to Hungary, because we think a great team for that country. She speaks fluent Hungarian.
Mm-hmm.
I had a venture capital background. The Hungarians needed advice, among other things.
This was right after the fall of the Soviet Union.
Yes. The Russian troops actually left Hungary in 1991, and we got there in April 1994.
Right.
So it was a very wonderful time to be there, in the sense that everything was moving. All the opportunities to change the course of history in Hungary.
And it's amazing how the Eastern Europeans embraced entrepreneurship and capitalism as well.
Yes, they were Europeans. They were instinctively entrepreneurial. The Hungarians certainly were. They had, as many people know, something called goulash communism for years, Communism, not really goulash, but it was kind of a very, very small entrepreneurship system. And they were ready to embrace capitalism, as were the Czechs, the Poles, and the others. But there were problems along the way. And when we arrived in Hungary, for example, some 75 or 80% of the economy, of all the businesses, were still government-owned. They're still nationalized.
Wow.
And when we left in the beginning of 1998, that figure was down to about 20 or 25%. We'd
congratulations.
We privatized.
Well, you changed the lives of millions of people.
We did at the time. That's right.
Yes, and I congratulate you on that, for your service, and to your wife for her service and for her devotion to her country and helping bring our countries closer together.
No question. We had a lot of interesting issues. NATO being one of them. The war in Bosnia being part of that.
Mm-hmm.
We brought the FBI Academy over to set up a school for middle-level police officers throughout Central and Eastern Europe.
Right, right.
And there was a lot to do, but the key issues, though, were the economy and security. Together with those things, giving the Hungarians a sense that their destiny was in their own hands. It was not in the hands of the Russians or the Germans or the Turks or anybody else.
Well, you know, Mr. Ambassador, there are thousands of people serving their country in assignments in the Foreign Service, like in the embassies, mm-hmm. and in the commercial divisions of the embassies, doing business, working with the Chambers of Commerce locally and all that. There are thousands of people around the world who are doing this every day, and it's a whole universe that the average American doesn't even know is going on. So give us an example about a day in the life of an ambassador.
Well, first of all, let me respond to your comment by saying that one of the things that surprises most people who become ambassadors from the outside, political appointees like I was, is the quality and the dedication of the career Foreign Service officers all
right.
over the world.
I agree.
They're bright, they're terrific, they work hard, and they really provide a great service to the American people. In a typical day, I would have breakfast with my wife about 6:45 in the morning. She would read some of the headlines from the Hungarian papers that I couldn't read and tell me what was going on. Then I'd get in my car, and go to the chancellery, which was about 30 minutes away. The residence was in Buda. The chancellery was in Pest, across the river, across the Danube. At the chancellery, getting there, say, about 8:15, I would have a meeting with my press team. They would go over again with me all the events of the previous day that they thought were important enough for me to know about from the television, radio, mm-hmm. and newspapers. Then around 8:45, 9:00, I'd have a country team meeting. That's a term that people in the Foreign Service all know. The heads of your various departments, political, economic, security, military, would meet with the ambassador for half an hour, 40 minutes, in what we call the bubble room, a secure room where eavesdropping was not possible.
Hold on to that thought, Mr. Ambassador. We've got to take a quick break. Right back, we're going to finish up the day, and a few more questions I've got for the ambassador. Ambassador Blinken, he and his wife have written a book called Vera and the Ambassador, available wherever books are sold. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. Ambassador Donald Blinken is my guest, and he and his wife, Vera, have written a book called Vera and the Ambassador, Escape and Return. This is an outstanding book about their experiences as the ambassadors to Hungary. She, a native of Hungary, and who came to America and found her life there, and then returned to Hungary to give back to this country as they did in such a wonderful way. And Ambassador, you were just telling us a little bit about at lunchtime in regard to the day in the life of an ambassador. Now, was this a typical day? Was this something that would happen just about every day?
Well, you never knew, Jim. Some days you had important visitors coming in to your office, and you have to carve out a lot of time for them, whether they were Americans from congressional delegations or military.
Right.
Other days you spent a good deal of time with business leaders coming to Hungary wanting advice or help on establishing companies in Hungary. But at the same time, the ambassador is always called upon to get out of the embassy, mm-hmm. not only to visit other cities and other parts of the country, but to spend time with other embassies. There are constant receptions and meetings at other
mm-hmm.
other embassies, and one of the big problems that an ambassador has is how to use his time, a hard time, efficiently.
How to know when to say no.
Exactly. you don't want to spend your whole life in the car. You actually want to be somewhere where you can do some work.
Well, it sounds like an enchanting experience, and I know it was a wonderful experience, but it's not exactly it's a high energy experience too, isn't it?
No question about it. You're on call really 7 days a week.
Yeah.
That's what the ambassador is there for. And your day doesn't stop at 5 in the afternoon, because most evenings there's a reception someplace that you have to attend. And since you're representing the United States, in our case, not turning up at someone else's embassy or someone else's affair can really upset them. They really want the United States to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So you do your best.
One thing I want to do, my son is a Marine. Would you like to say anything about the military folks who stood a post outside your unit there?
Yes, I had 9 Marines guarding our embassy. The Marines, you should understand, are not there to guard the ambassador, but
right.
to guard the premises, to guard the building and its contents.
Mm-hmm.
They're terrific young men, and we enjoyed working with them. They were there every morning, and
They're doing this all over the world, ladies
all
and gentlemen.
All over the world.
Even as we speak.
They do a terrific job. And, of course, my military advisors were wonderful as well, the Air Force and the military. They did a great job. And the thing I'm most proud of, I think, is the way we, the American Embassy, helped NATO stage the Bosnian campaign. All of the troops that went into Bosnia after the Dayton Agreement,
mm-hmm.
went in through Hungary through a place called Tassar, which
right.
base we set up with our military, and it worked beautifully. More than 25,000 NATO forces went into Bosnia to keep peacekeeping, not a single casualty, all through
right.
Hungary, all through a base that my embassy and the military established.
Mr. Ambassador, a couple of last questions. Number one, what did you take away from, and finally, what would be you think would be the most important thing you took away from your service in Hungary?
That, I think ambassadors count, particularly in smaller countries where they really make a difference. And the President and the Secretary of State can't spend a lot of time on countries the size of Hungary, the Czech Republic. They have more, they have bigger fish to fry. So the ambassador, if he or she is really interested in the job and wants to work, can make an enormous difference in the relationship between the United States and that country. And secondly, you have a great feeling of satisfaction in being of service. And this is a case of where your service is very, very visible and very clear, because the things
right.
you do, you can see the results of it rather quickly.
I've got about a minute left. Your thoughts on where we are and where capitalism is right now, where the economy, where do you think we're going? What do you think we need to do? Give us some of your sage advice on where we should be going with the marketplace, with capitalism.
Well, I feel that the Obama administration, has got it right. We have to do something. The alternative to not doing anything would be more unemployment. More
Are you concerned about so much government intervention?
No, not a bit. I think it's absolutely essential. I mean, in the long run, one doesn't want more government intervention than is absolutely essential. But at the moment, given this worldwide recession, worldwide depression,
yeah.
It's absolutely critical that governments all over the world, not only the United States, but our European allies, Japan, China, Russia, all the rest, can
quickly,
work
do you think we can get the government out one day?
I think the natural evolution is for when the economy gets back on its feet and things go well, for
right.
the government's intervention to recede and to become less visible and less intrusive. At the moment, though, at this point in time, I think it's absolutely critical and essential.
The book is called Vera and the Ambassador, Escape and Return. It's outstanding. Mr. Ambassador, thank you for your service and thank you for being here today.
Jim, thank you very much.
Our best to Vera.
I should.
Gotta go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame. I'll be back after the news.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.